At Byers Volkswagen, we've been family-owned since 1897, built on trust, driven by innovation. And now, buying your next Volkswagen is easier than ever. Shop online, customize your deal, and finalize everything from home. Just stop by to pick up the keys. It's that simple.
Drive home a new 2026 Volkswagen Tiguan S for $286 for 36 months with $2,499 due at signing.
The next generation shops online, and we're driving with them at ColumbusVolkswagen.com or visit us by the airport.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/2026.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's Little Fish. This is the show where you send us some unbelievable facts. We say whether we believe them or not, and then we say whether you should believe them or not, because we've done some extra research on them, and then at the end we will do some extra other stuff. But in the meantime, I am joined by Andrew Hunter-Murray, Dan Schreiber, my name is James Harkin, and who is going to give us the first fact today?
I'll do one. Go for it. All right. This is a fact from Simonida Popov. So thank you, Simonida, for writing in. Terrific fact is that there is an area in Los Angeles which is known as Silver Lake, right? And it's named after the Silver Lake Reservoir nearby.
Uh-huh.
And it is named not after the silver color of its water, but after Herman Silver.
Oh, no.
The LA Water Commissioner at the time the reservoir was built.
That's quite early to get into the things that are named after people but you think that it's going to be things that their names are similar to, when
yes.
they're not.
I thought the element of surprise is so important here. And the longer I leave it in the episode, the more likely you guys were thinking, oh, Andy's going to do his blooming book idea now. But
how, how much of a surprise is it to Little Fish listeners? Because we talk about it a lot on Drop Us a Line.
I know we do it a lot in Little Fish
do
as
we?
Well.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
We do it in real life as well, listener.
The terrible thing is, in the inbox of Drop Us a Line, they're flooding in.
Right.
I'm now being bounced into doing this book by the sheer number.
Well, it sounds like it's more normal than we realize. So actually, what I might write is the book of things that are named not for people who were named after the thing that it sounds like it's named after.
Yeah. That's a good sequel book.
Yeah. Well, it's a competitor at the Tills.
Very nice. Any more on the lake or just...
No, it's just called Silver Lake.
Very good.
Do lakes look silver? I don't feel like I've seen a silver lake. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Come on, mate.
Well, give me an example.
Where's the moonlight? The water is silvery, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I think silvery is definitely a word that's often used to describe water.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just thinking daytime. That's nighttime.
It'll be blue to brown.
Blue to Brown Lake. It doesn't have quite the
it's not romantic, is it?
Actually, it's named after Stephen Blue and Arthur Brown.
Shall I read one here?
Yes.
Okay, this is from Jonas Mortensen of Denmark, who says, longtime listener and fellow fact aficionado, during a Saturday low energy TV watching with my kids, watching some random nature documentary, I discovered that the hippopotamus has the same body fat percentage as Usain Bolt at his absolute peak. So basically, sub 10%, less than 10%
fat. A hippopotamus is less than 10% fat.
They're all muscle.
They're incredibly muscly. Usain Bolt, I read, was about 8% body fat. He probably went a bit lower than that. But
that's
hippos.
That's low.
That's low.
Sorry.
It's not like you.
No, it wouldn't be high, would it? It was like the amazing thing was he did it. And, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hippos are about 2 to 5% fat.
Get out.
That's the data online.
It's interesting. That's true of quite a lot of animals are way less fatty than you think they're going to be.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So they're all muscle.
They're all muscle. Now, here's the question. We often get told hippos are faster than you realize because they charge at people. A lot of deaths are a result of hippos. In a 100-meter race, who would win? A hippo or Usain Bolt?
For me, a hippo, 100%.
Okay.
Is it from a dead start? As in they stopped before? Because I can imagine Usain Bolt taking off very fast and winning.
He was actually a surprisingly slow starter, Usain Bolt. Like, he was famous. If his start was as fast as some other 100-meter runners, he would be even faster.
That's really funny. Sorry, you're saying he was slow?
I'm saying slow he was off the blocks. Slow.
He was actually really slow, guys.
Oh, he was, honestly, he was always a faster finisher than a starter.
That's very interesting.
How'd he do? I stopped watching after the first 2 seconds.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really
It's all comparative, right?
Yeah.
He's better than us.
His slow start is probably quicker than my quick start.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, he's better than us. Arguably, he's better than any human ever.
Not at the start.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm saying Usain Bolt will win over a hippo.
You're saying Usain Bolt will win. Okay. The answer is that Usain Bolt, at his fastest, reached 44.7 kilometers an hour, and a hippo gets to about 30. So actually, Usain Bolt, in that 100-meter sprint, would win.
But put it over 800 meters, maybe we've got ourselves a ball game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who knows? We've never tested it. I know Michael Phelps once swam against a shark, apparently.
But a CGI shark.
As a CGI shark. Yeah. We need a CGI hippo against a CGI at his peak, Usain Bolt.
Yeah, okay.
What's interesting is if these speeds are what they would be running at, Usain Bolt would pass the finishing line 2 seconds before a hippo. And a fact that you did, James, on the show ages ago, is roughly 2 seconds is the amount of time that Usain Bolt's feet are touching the ground over a 100-meter sprint.
Not sure quite what that says about the world.
No.
Not much.
But when you sit back and think about it.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Usain Bolt's fastest speeds would occur in the 200 meters.
Would they?
Yeah.
Because he's already going so quickly after the first
effort. Yeah, because it gives him a chance to get up to speed.
Because he's so slow off the blocks.
hangs about,
doesn't he?
Anyone who watches athletics will be going, James, you're absolutely right. He was famously a slow starter.
But was it? Do we hear the gun go, and then we hear his coach going, "Usain, it's got what?"
Here is a fact. This is also about human beings, and yours was about like fat content and stuff like that. This is more about height. And it's from Oscar Matalainen. And Oscar says, after extensive research, I have figured out that Eminem is exactly 138.4 M&Ms tall. Okay.
That's lovely. That's lovely.
Now, I've done some research of my own. Yeah. And I looked on the internet about how tall Eminem is and how big an Eminem is. And I don't think Oscar's figures exactly stack up.
Interesting. Stack up. Very funny pun.
Thank you. I'm here all week. But the truth is that actually the figures that you get online of like how big an M&M is, they vary quite a lot. Like on Amazon, it says one thing. If like on newspapers, they say other things and stuff whenever it's mentioned, which is not that often.
On Amazon, because like often they'll give the dimensions of like a book that you're buying.
100%.
You get individual M&M dimensions.
I promise you it does.
Who's reading? Who's needing that info before purchasing?
You don't want to order a bag of M&Ms and then they're all 10 feet across.
We've all done that. Yeah.
Exactly.
So what I have done is I brought us some M&Ms.
Ah, nice.
Oh, nice.
So we have
Foley.
A little bit of Foley there. Dan, I've got you some peanut ones.
Thank you.
Andy, I've got you some regular.
Thank you.
And we're going to measure them.
Can I open them?
Yeah. But okay. It's going to be hard to measure them if you don't open them.
Can I eat one or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Okay, so if you give me one of the peanut ones, we're looking at diameter, I suppose.
Right? I thought you were stacking them top to bottom, like putting them down flat.
Okay, well, we can do it that way as well.
Okay.
But the one that you've got there is quite spherical.
Hang on, here's my...
Do you want to measure it?
Oh,
So I'm passing Andy a ruler.
It's just over a centimetre. If I'm doing it the longest dimension, it's about 1.3.
Okay, well, you've got the regular ones, Andy, so let's go for that.
Okay.
1.3 centimetres.
Yeah.
Okay, so according to the internet, now this is another problem we have. The internet is also unsure about how tall Eminem is.
Oh, boy.
Right.
But the general consensus is that he's 5'8".
Okay.
He mentions in some of his rap lyrics that he's shorter than that, but it's not always clear in the lyrics if he's talking about himself or something else.
Okay.
It's a problem with like going to first-hand sources sometimes.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
history,
yeah, yeah.
You don't know exactly what they're talking about. So let's say he's 173 centimeters tall,
okay,
which is what the internet thinks. And Andy, you think that your M&M is what size?
1.3
centimeters. Then he is 133.07692.
What were we trying to get up? What was our correspondent saying?
He was got quite close, actually, 138.
Oh.
But we found that the peanut ones are a little bit bigger than that still.
If I'm stacking mine flat... This one was about, I'd say, 1.1.
Divided by 1.1.
I mean, Eminem will shrink as he gets older, so we could eventually meet the amount we've just had.
So going the stacking method, the AHMSM, the Andrew Hunter Murray stacking method would be 157 M&Ms.
Oh, okay, okay.
So
okay.
It's worse still. So yeah, Oscar, your extensive research, I don't know if it was the same as ours, as in actually getting the M&Ms, but until we get the wrapper in the room as well, we can't do a full experiment.
But he's on next week, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is, yeah.
And he was very funny in the recording. You're very funny.
If I can't get a full 45 minutes without any swear words in, we might have to cut that episode.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay.
Here's a fact from Stuart Dunster, who says, in 2024, the British Army was so busy that 137% of its personnel were committed to operations or exercise.
What does that mean?
This is amazing. Basically, you can do, if you're in the Army, you can do a task like readiness training in parallel with other exercises or commitments or whatever. So
it's overtime, basically, right?
Kind of. You need to be prepared to drop everything if you're called on to deploy, but also carry on with the current exercise you're doing. And it causes lots of work and paperwork, and it's a huge pain. Basically, it's a fun way of saying the Army is under-resourced, which is not a fun fact, but there we go. But
so
there you go.
When we say that there was, like, let's say the Grand Old Duke of York had 10,000 men.
Yeah.
It might have only been 8,000, but some of them are doing two jobs.
He'll only have been able to deploy 2,000 of those men. 100%. Yeah, yeah. Many of those will be in logistics and supply and all of that stuff. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Fun fact, who was this fact from?
You just said
Stuart
Dunster.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Brother of.
Oh, Phil.
Really?
Former guest on this podcast, yes.
Oh, nice.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, hi, Stu.
Wonder if we'll get one from Eminem's brother.
I've got another one here, which is from Julia Fisher, the subject line of which is, every word of this fact is dubious at best.
Oh, great.
Why did you send this one to Dan, Andy?
I can't remember.
So, this is the fact. The oldest living dog is invisible and 11,000 years old.
Yes. Yes.
Now, this is genuinely fascinating. So this is the email from Julia. Basically, there is a kind of tumor that dogs can infect other dogs with, already unusual. This has been discovered to be a tumor which developed on a dog which was alive 11,000 years ago. That tumor then jumped from that original dog to a different dog, but it was still made up of the cells of the original dog. Mm. Those cells have been continuously alive in the bodies of different dogs ever since. It's only invisible to the naked eye because it's tiny cells, not magic or nothing. She wrote nothing. I just said nothing. I have absolutely zero qualifications in any biology, so please don't listen to me. However, I think this is correct.
That's stunning.
So this is called the canine transmissible venereal tumor. And this is a tumor that is exchanged during mating with dogs. So it's a genital-based disease. Between dogs. Yeah.
just you said mating with dogs. It's a very minor difference, but it just felt worth pointing out.
Well, we know where your red lines are, James.
That's an important detail. That's right.
Yeah. Dog on dog.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is this is one of only three known transmittable cancers.
I know one.
Yep.
Tasmanian devils.
Yes.
Ooh.
The devil facial tumor disease. Yeah. And then there's the
Tasmanian devils again.
Yes. Yeah. And then there's the Syrian hamster, which is the other one that gets it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So they're infectious agents, and the tumors that form are not genetically related to the host dog. So it is this
original
dog. So
you're saying it's these cells from this dog 11,000 years ago?
Yeah. Now, the thing is the question is, was the dog 11,000 years old? There's a lot of debate going on. I think it might be 6,000, then they thought 11,000.
Okay.
And now they're saying maybe between 200 and 2,500. Doesn't matter. It's a long time ago. And it's the same cells from this one dog. Yeah.
We got to remake the dog, haven't we? We got to extract some of the cells, do a Richard Attenborough on it.
Oh, yeah.
Get that dog. Jurassic Park it.
Oh, yeah. Jurassic Bark.
Give that man a raise. Jurassic Bark. That's cute.
Okay.
That's cute.
You know
that's
what?
Pretty
that's
good.
That was a rare example of a joke being so good that the two people in the room were shocked more than amused.
In my head, I was just going, oh, God, I can't cap that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might as well just retire.
Okay. We're calling jokes cute. I think undone slightly.
I called it cute because I was angry and insulted.
Right.
I just couldn't come up with anything as good, so I thought I'll try and bring yours down. But it was really
jealousy
good.
Jealousy coming through, right. Well, anyway,
I don't think they're the same cells.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, they're not, are they? They're cells that have developed from those cells, as in the original ones are long gone.
Yep.
But they've replicated.
Yes. I suppose the main thing being it's not genetically connected to that dog. So I guess that's the cheat. But yeah, brilliant, Julia. Yeah, amazing. Really, thank you.
Jurassic World.
We've done it, buddy. It's been done.
Dogminion.
What?
There was one called Dominion. Yeah.
Was there?
Yeah. Let's come back to it.
Let's do another fact. This one comes from Stav Berman. And Stav says, space coffee fact. Coffee on the ISS is made with a machine called the ISS Espresso.
Lovely.
It is drunk out of a specially designed zero-G espresso cup.
Mm. Now, hang on. Mm. I would assume that a zero-G cup is just a cup with a lid. Am I wrong?
Yes.
Because any cup without a lid is not a zero-G cup.
Right, okay. So you've got a cup with a lid.
Yeah.
Have you got a little hole that you can get the coffee out?
You have to.
So when you turn it upside down to pour it, what happens to the liquid?
Good point.
How's it coming out?
Well, you have to suck it out.
Yes.
So you're sucking hot coffee? You're going to burn your mouth.
Yeah, true.
So this was a problem that was suffered by astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti, who was an Italian astronaut who went up to the ISS in April 2015. And they came up with this zero-G espresso cup, and it uses capillary channel flow.
Oh.
So that is, capillary action is that liquid will go into a tiny tube. It'll move up a tiny tube against the flow of gravity, or in fact, if there's no gravity, against nothing. But it will flow inside a tiny tube. And that's because it kind of sticks to the edges of the tube a little bit. And also it sticks to itself. So once it starts going up, it starts pulling more liquid up.
Okay.
And this is a well-known sort of physics reaction thing that happens. And they utilized it to make this coffee cup.
It's a shame it's a coffee cup, because if they did tea, they could just call it gravity.
Yeah.
Really nice. Not as good as the Jurassic.
No.
Nothing's as good as Jurassic Park. Your career's peaked. That's it from now on.
Let's go grab a T.
I loved it. I liked it. I thought it was cute.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good joke, but like, it's a curve. Your career is a curve, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've just reached the very top of it.
Yeah.
So obviously the next show is going to be really, really good.
It was. It was still great.
So listener, just listen in to all of Dan's jokes from future. Listen to them get slowly and slowly worse than that.
Yeah. So what I should do is just stop talking, right? And just allow that's your conclusion,
not ours. That's not what we are saying.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you come to that conclusion, then we're not going to stop you.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's a great fact.
Yeah, thanks, Staff.
Here's one from Evan M. Gildenblatt. This is about a rather special bridge between Cincinnati, Ohio, and Covington, Kentucky. Right, it's called the Bailey Bridge, and the interesting thing about it is that it is named after a man named Clay Wade Bailey.
Yeah, but you would expect that.
Yeah,
absolutely. But there is a type of bridge.
If they'd have called it the Clay Bridge. It was made out of clay, but it was named after him. That would be amazing.
We'd have a ball game. But the interesting thing is, it is not a Bailey-type bridge, which is an existing, very famous kind of bridge. There's a Bailey Bridge, and the Bailey Bridge here is not a Bailey Bridge.
Yeah.
It's a cantilevered bridge.
Yeah, okay.
And I just wanted to talk a bit about Bailey Bridges, because they're so cool.
Yeah, yeah. Are they?
Bailey was a guy called Donald Bailey. And he was a civil servant in the British War Office who made model bridges as a hobby. Okay. Second World War breaks out, and suddenly lots of bridges are going to be needed across Europe. When D-Day happens, the Germans, if they're retreating, will be blowing up a lot of bridges. And in Italy, like lots of places you need to get to.
They often made temporary bridges as well, didn't they, when they were moving tanks around?
These were the bridges that that Donald Bailey proposed and designed.
Cool.
So he literally drew the first model of it on the back of an envelope. It was literally on the back of an envelope, and he said, I think this could work. And basically it's like a just huge Meccano, so it's all pop slot. You don't need much
That's
special
cool.
equipment.
It's I think so one cool. thing they used to do is they used to have like tanks that were almost like in the shape of a bridge, and you would drive your tank into the river and it would become the bridge, and then everyone would drive over them.
Oh, that's clever.
There are some devices called Hobart's Funnies, which were specially weird. They were the really weird machines for engineering in the war. But over 200 miles of Bailey Bridge were built during the war. I mean, thousands of them, about 5,000.
Are any still extant?
I think lots are, yeah. I think lots are. Cool. And Donald Bailey got knighted for it. Field Marshal Montgomery said they would not have won the war nearly as easily or well without Donald Bailey's bridges.
Because we did win it quite easily in the end, didn't we?
Quite easily. bit of a push. If you have enough engineers, you can build a Bailey Bridge in 32 minutes, says
that
a 1945
is very cool.
It's really cool.
That's very cool. You guys ever played that app where you have to build a bridge?
No.
You've got to build a bridge using various angles that you play. So you have to work out how you can create a construction that allows for a van to cross.
Cool.
And so it usually collapses because it's very hard to build a bridge.
No, I have started recently playing a game called Euro Truck Simulator. But Yeah.
How far in are you?
I'm still at Dover. A lot of paperwork.
Since Brexit, that game has been a nightmare.
It's an absolute nightmare.
Okay, that is enough of your facts. What amazing facts they were this week, indeed, as they are every week. But now it is time to go through our archive, the one that Andy has painstakingly typed up over the years, and take those lines from his spreadsheet and hand them out to you, the listener. If you are a member of our Patreon at the top tier, which is Friend of the Podcast, you will become a custodian of a No Such Thing as a Fish fact. We will send you a digital certificate and we will mention your name on this show. So whose name are we going to mention first today? Dan.
It is Brittany Bentley. Congratulations. Your fact is now the world's largest saw is used to cut through mountains in Kazakhstan.
Terrific. Terrific.
I wonder if it's still the world's largest saw.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Maybe. Although, can't get much bigger than
a mountain-cutting sword. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. If you look at pictures of it, it's wicked.
Is it?
Yeah.
How many trips back and forth would it need to make? Because presumably it's not the size of a mountain.
Or is it a circular saw? Like Dan's imagining, like, you know, two people on either side of a saw sort of pulling it back and forward.
Like a lumberjack.
Then. Yeah, like so Tenzing and Hillary were at the top. If they just started at the top and slowly went down with a saw.
I think it might be a circular saw.
I think so.
It rings a bell. Yes, it's a circular saw. I've just checked. I've just found an article which begins, Frodo's journey to Mordor in Lord of the Rings would have been much easier if he'd had one of these things.
Yeah, it's also much easier if he had a helicopter.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Frodo's journey would have been made so much easier by modern tech. I know. I've got a fact. This one goes out to Wine Cat. In Victorian speed walking competitions, you were allowed to jog as necessary to relieve cramp.
Very good.
Yeah.
You know what I remember most about this episode is you guys had all researched stuff about speed walking and I'd researched stuff about cramp. And so I didn't have anything to say in this whole section.
Oh, really?
It's the first moment like that where I realized that actually we should maybe coordinate what we're researching a little.
And we're about a year into the podcast at this point. So quite...
Because now, listener, what you don't know probably is that we send each other our headline facts and then we usually put a little steer as to which direction we might go in.
Yeah.
We don't tell each other what we found, but we tell each other which direction we're going. So we all are kind of talking on the same subject.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
This one is now under the custodianship of Jonathan Mundy. And Jonathan, your fact is that the 2012 law prohibiting nudity in San Francisco was proposed by a politician called Scott Wiener.
Lovely.
How interesting that I'm flashing forward to another nudist fact that we did years later, which was another one of yours. So someone one day will be custodian of this. But the nudist in America,
Dick Bacon,
the sort of nominative determinism of nudists, prominent nudists, is quite amazing.
Yeah,
and actually in Germany, I think a couple of major nudists in the early days were the Kochs.
Yes,
Mr. and Mrs. Koch. I can't remember their first names. But I think it's a real missed opportunity by San Francisco not to pass this law and to call it Wiener's Law. Because then it could have gone into your book, Andy.
Yes. Yeah, you've missed out, San Francisco. And as a result, no one's ever heard of your city.
All right, let's do another one now. This is Phil Wilde. Phil Wilde's fact is that so he could keep eating, Charles Darwin's grandfather, Erasmus, cut a semicircle out of his dining table. That was a little crescent which he'd put his stomach into so that he could be closer.
You know what
to
that sounds like to me is like he had an extremely distendable stomach that as he ate would get bigger and bigger and bigger, which does happen to a small extent, but not enough in my experience that you would need to cut a hole in your table.
Yes. Yeah.
I think he was crazy, wasn't he? He did all sorts of mad stuff. He was an inventor.
Was he?
And he was, yeah, he was a very important scientist and philosopher.
He was part of the Lunar Society, which was the sort of the leading brains at the time of science, who would only meet when it was a full moon so that they could walk home late at night, hence the Lunar Society.
That's very clever. Here's one that goes out to Dominique Turenne. And this is one of my facts, actually. It's one I'm very proud of, is that Volkswagen sells more sausages than cars.
Very good.
I think it's that you got given a free sausage, a pack of sausages with every car you bought.
Yeah. So
was that
there
it?
Was like, I think there was like eight in a pack. So it meant that they sold eight times more sausages. So
inevitably, yeah. There's no way they can get around that. And no matter how fast the car guys work, the sausage team are always going to be a step ahead of them.
However, can I say that I have got a Volkswagen in the last couple of years, last year, in fact, and no sausages came my way.
Oh, really?
Interesting. Yeah.
Now, that might be because you went electric, James, so there's no exhaust pipe for the sausages to be stuffed up.
Is that how they deliver them?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah. They could have put them in the charging pot.
That's a really nice idea. Because you've got that whole grid of charging points. Yeah. Yeah, perfect, perfect. Mm. No, you're right. I don't know
why.
It
could fit like six chipolatas in there.
You've said that before.
Okay, this next fact is under the custodianship of Chris C. Chris, your fact is the animal kingdom forgot how to have sex for 40 million years.
What's exciting about this is we did this fact very early on, episode 50, and on our last Australian tour, we met the scientist who published this report. He came on stage and was put into the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, he was in either Adelaide or Perth. And yeah, we got to meet him. And he wrote a book about sharks, which is out now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, shark guy.
Yeah.
And it's all about the fact that there was internal reproduction, I think, that happened many millions of years ago. And then it disappears from the fossil record.
Yes.
Oh, internal, not within yourself.
No.
Well, it depends who you are, I suppose.
Yeah, it's like dog on dog, basically.
I understand. That's a brilliant fact.
That's very cool, yeah. All right, I got another one here. This is to Xander Sinji, and the fact is the son of the man who invented shredded wheat invented round shredded wheat.
Beautiful.
Brilliant.
Beautiful.
Perkins or Perky?
Perky. Henry Perky, I think.
Yeah.
And his disappointing son. Although now they're sort of a bit round and a bit square, aren't they?
Are they? I haven't had a shredded wheat for at least 30 years.
I was thinking of Weetabix. Disregard whatever I've just said. I was thinking of Weetabix, which have rounded ends. Shredded wheat have sharp...
They're like pillows, aren't they?
They're like pillows. They've got sharp corners, but also rounded arches.
I'm not doing a pillow fight with you.
And the thing is, you can only have two, supposedly.
Yeah.
Like, and if someone has three shredded wheats in the morning, that shows that they're forced to be reckoned with.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the old saying. Isn't that? That's James. I'm looking at you here.
Again, a little bit thinking Weetabix. Like, I'm sure we would like say, oh, you've had an extra Weetabix today.
How interesting.
Like if someone hits a long shot in the golf course or something.
Oh, man. It turns out I don't know the difference between shredded wheat and Weetabix.
I don't know. It might be.
In Australia, it's called Weet-Bix.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't tell you when I first moved there how it's like you're still in jet lag anytime you hear Weet-Bix.
Yeah, yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. It's like a glitch in the universe.
I'm so sorry. I've just checked it. It's an old advertising slogan from the 1980s. Shredded wheat. Bet you can't eat three.
Okay.
And it was when David Cameron, our prime minister, was saying, do you want to go for another term in office? He said, no, it's like shredded wheat. Two are wonderful, three might be too many. As it was, he led a catastrophic referendum and was forced to resign halfway through his second And now you're
shredded wheat. Now he's got all the time in the world to eat shredded wheat.
Meanwhile, you're stuck at the immigration queue as you're trying to get your virtual truck into Europe.
Should we do one more? I've got one more fact. Here's another one. Here's one last one that goes out to Tyler Whittam. Witham, possibly. Hi, Tyler. Your name's definitely Tyler. In the 1960s, a Canadian psychologist visited cafes across the world, testing how much couples touched each other. In Puerto Rico, it was 180 times an hour. In Paris, 110. And in London, it was zero.
Yeah. Very good.
We just don't need to show off about it, all right?
I feel like we've become more international in the last 10 years since that fact. So I reckon there's more touching in the UK these days.
Hmm. Do you think so? Yeah, probably.
Like, I reckon people give me way more hugs when I meet them now than they did 10 years ago.
I think you have also dropped your guard a bit. You used to be a lot more standoffish about being hugged, and you used to make it clear that that's not on the menu.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I think you come across a bit more. You're wearing a floral shirt today. People are thinking, I can hug this guy.
Excuse me. I wear this knowing that the audience don't know what I'm wearing.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, but you're not wearing anything else. So it's
yeah, okay. I never thought about that as part of my personality. I thought I was still as standoffish now as I ever have been.
You've mellowed. You've softened.
Have I?
Yeah.
That's so, living in London, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Imagine if I lived in Puerto Rico.
It'd be very hard.
Okay, that's the end of our facts given to you, and in fact, your facts given to us. But we do want to say thank you to Tyler, Xander, Chris, Dominique, Phil, Jonathan, Winecat, and Brittany for becoming our latest Friends of the Podcast custodians. If you would like to send us some facts, then send them to podcast@qi.com, where Andy will go through them and pick out the very best ones for this show. If you would like to become a custodian of a fact, then go to patreon.com/clubfish and join us at the very top tier, which is Friend of the Podcast. And it is those special people who get their names read out on this show. If you don't want to do any of those things, then fear not. We will be back on Friday for another Big Fish episode. So it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Dan Schreiber.
Oh, goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Andrew Hunter Murray.
Jurassic World 2, the barkening. I'll just keep workshopping it. Bye.
Bye.